Although today Taiwan has a high level of literacy and female education, there is still a group of people who have been forgotten. They have not benefited from gender equality. They are unable to speak for themselves or fight for their own rights. They need access to vital information like which hotline to call for help when faced with domestic violence, how to apply for social welfare, or how to open a bank account. For women who are illiterate, accessing this information is very difficult. Today's guest, Xin Yi, wrote these words about her experience in Taiwan. The Old Testament prophet Micah tells us to do justice. So how do we do justice? Job from the Bible described justice in action. I rescued the poor who cried for help, and the fatherless who had none to assist them. The one who was dying blessed me. I made the widow's heart sing. I put on righteousness as my clothing. Justice was my robe. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy. I took up the case of the stranger. I broke the fangs of the wicked and snatched the victims from their teeth. This is justice. Job was a father to the needy and made the widow's heart sing. Likewise, this is the character of God. For David proclaimed, "Sing to God, sing in praise of his name. A father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, is God in his holy dwelling. God sets the lonely in families. He leads out the prisoners with singing." How do we live out this justice? Let us learn from Xin Yi as she discusses with Wei Chun the challenges and rewards of serving women on the margins in Taipei, Taiwan. The light of Jesus is shining from many nations. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Let us hear how he is shining from Asia.
Hi, Xin Yi. Can you introduce yourself?
My name is Xin Yi, and I'm sent by ARPC to serve with OMF in Taiwan as a missionary.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been in Taiwan since 2009, so about 9 years now.
Wow, that's a long time. Can you tell us a bit about how you got into this?
Well, in 2007, I did a one-year missions internship with OMF in Taiwan. So OMF's focus in Taiwan is to share the gospel with the working class and to plant churches in the working class communities. And then now my work is mainly with the women in the red light district in Wanhua, Taipei. Yeah, at the Pearl Family Garden.
How did God lead you to work with people on the margins? Like you mentioned, women in the red light district, for example.
Well, for me, I think God used different things. But one of the key things was that in 2008, I was a volunteer at HealthServe in Geylang. And HealthServe is a community clinic. So I was helping, like we had a meeting with Chinese migrant workers every week, every Friday. So we have a meeting together.
How did you get involved with HealthServe?
Well, I was just back from Taiwan. And I was looking for a way to serve outside of the usual comforts of ARPC.
Oh, the standard ministry.
Yeah, so my friend suggested that I go to Geylang. And at that time, the ministry was just starting. They just started the clinic there. And so they said, oh, you can just go there and befriend the workers. And actually, many of them who came, they were people, like construction workers who were injured at work. And then they were in Singapore to wait for their compensation or to wait to get the damages awarded to them. But during this time, they had no support, they had no income. So HealthServe was their community for that time.
This was started by a doctor, right?
Yeah, so at that time, it was mainly Dr. Goh Wei Leong. And now, I mean, he just got the Singaporean of the Year award. So this was 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was still early days back then. And I think, firstly, going to Geylang was a culture shock for me.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't think I really went to Geylang before that.
Right.
Yeah, so I was quite shocked by the kind of living conditions in Geylang. And then, and also the kind of treatment that these migrant workers, they received. I mean, it's one thing knowing that, you know, Singapore has a lot of migrant workers, but it's another thing when you meet them face to face and then you hear their stories of how they face, like, firstly, the working conditions are quite tough, long hours, and then they're usually not treated very well by Singaporeans. And then when they are injured at work, then maybe they also face discrimination. They don't get treated fairly. So they need a lot of help, not just help with surviving in Singapore, but also legal help, medical help.
What do you think God was showing you when you were involved in this ministry?
He just showed me that there's actually a group of people in Singapore who are marginalized. Because we can be very comfortable in our middle class circles and we never think of old people who are having a difficult time. Or we know about it like stories in the newspaper, but because we don't know them as real people, so it doesn't impact us as much. But when you are face to face with someone, then you really feel like there's something wrong with the system. So I remember one construction worker from mainland China who lost his hearing because he was like working in the basement. I think he was doing demolition in the basement and that's why he lost his hearing. It was quite shocking because he was in his 40s only and then he was a hairdresser in China. So I think that's the other thing also. I realized that when they come over, they may not know what they are getting into. So it's like a big shock for them also. When they come, they get into something, they don't really know the job very well and then they don't know their rights. They don't know how to protect themselves at work. And then when they are injured, like where to seek help. I think that's also is an area where we can serve them. So in Taiwan, the people that we work with, OMF as a whole, we are focused on the working class. Usually people in the service industry or doing manual labor kind of jobs. Long working hours. Their religion is still pretty much traditional religion. Idol worship, ancestor worship. They prefer to speak Taiwanese instead of Mandarin. Most of them, we find, they prefer oral means of communication. So for us, to share the gospel with them, more with oral stories rather than like Bible studies.
When you first arrived in Taiwan, how did you zoom in on one of these ministries in the red light district?
When I first joined OMF, actually, even when I was an intern, I already met Tara, who started the Pearl Family Garden. The centre was started in 2008, so this year we 10th year anniversary. But actually, even before 2008, she was already doing some ministry in the Red Light District.
And yeah. She's from OMF?
Yeah, she's one of our missionaries, and she used to work with the homeless people in the same neighbourhood.
So you were there to assist in...
When I went to Taiwan as an intern, I already knew that she was starting this ministry. And then in 2009, when I went back to Taiwan, I joined the team.
What have you learned about poverty through your ministry?
I think one thing that struck me was that poverty is not just about not having enough money, but it's also the lack of information. It's also like maybe social network, social support, family relationships. Maybe your family is not able to help you. And these are all the things that we depend on in order to do well. Actually, we need our family, we need like social network. But I find that people are in poverty maybe because they don't even have these things to begin with. Like they don't have this foundation. So it's very easy for them to slide into poverty.
As in they can't advance.
Yeah, because they can't even, like, if something happens, like they get sick, you know, there's no one to help them. Or because your living conditions are not good, you know, so your health is affected, and then you lose your job. You know, so it becomes a vicious cycle. Because you can't get a job, you know, if you don't have a home. But if you don't have a job, then you also can't get a home. It's like, yeah, it's like a chicken or egg situation. I think that the basic things that we can count on, like family, shelter, these are not things that everyone can count on, which we take for granted. I think this was brought home to me when, in terms of how much we depend on the help of our community. This was brought back to me when last September I had a minor accident with the scooter. I injured my finger and it was just a very, very small injury. But in Taiwan, I just couldn't get the medical help or I couldn't get the right treatment. So finally, I contacted Kevin, who is part of our missions committee. And then someone one of my prayer partners suggested that I get the consultation in Singapore, and she referred me to someone. So, you know, through church contacts, I found out, I could see a hand surgeon, and that was like Tuesday or Wednesday, and then the following Monday, I was already in Singapore seeing the doctor, and I realized that that's not an option that people without connections, that's not something that they can have. So in my case, you know, like I can come back to Singapore for help. You know, if I feel that I'm not getting the treatment that I need, you know, I can come back to Singapore. And in Singapore, I have access because of my friends, of connections in the church. I have access, can see a hand surgeon within a week. But actually, this is not something that, you can take for granted.
You weren't able to see a proper hand surgeon in Taiwan because you didn't have the connections?
My Taiwanese friends would say that in Taiwan, you just need to find the right doctor. But to find the right doctor, it's a bit tricky because who is the right doctor? I mean, you know, we don't know who are the right doctors.
Because of connections?
Yeah. Either connections or just the fact that we don't know which doctor, we don't know
where to start.
Where to start. It's like trying to navigate a medical system. It's not so easy. And I realized that, like, even when I try to ask the doctor questions, I realized that it's not so easy to get answers, you know, because it's a different culture as well. It's a different way, like, doctors expect you to do what they tell you, but they don't actually explain.
So these are the nuances, even though you're both speaking Mandarin.
Yes. And so I realized that because of my own difficulties trying to get medical help, then I realized that this is why the people that I work with, the women at the Pearl Family Garden, it's so difficult for them to seek help when they need help because of the fear of dealing with like bureaucracy, because of ignorance, like you don't know where to start. And you don't know how to communicate. I think that's the other, you know, you don't know the right questions to ask. You don't know how to access the help that you need. So I think that experience helped me to understand that there are many barriers that hold people back from seeking help. I think the other thing that I've learned is that I think in Singapore, we emphasize a lot on personal responsibility, on meritocracy. So the idea is that, if you work hard enough, then you will succeed. We are not exposed to like what happens when the odds are stacked against you. As I listen to many stories in my ministry, I realize that for some people, really the odds are stacked against them. You know, their spouse dies, they end up with a divorce, or someone in the family gets sick, or someone in the family gets into debt. And hard work is not enough to get them out. It's not because they're stupid or that they're lazy. But things happen and they don't have the resources to deal with these trials when they come. So I think there is a sense that I get lah. I think when I first started the ministry, I wasn't so aware of my privilege. It took a lot of different things for me to, for example, my best friend in Taiwan, she's a Taiwanese American, so she grew up in America. And she went to like the University of Chicago, she went to Yale Divinity School, but she also worked in inner city ministries. So she used to say, you know, that she felt like almost like guilty about all these privileges that she had, you know, like her family was very supportive, she has this very good education. And I used to think, okay, so that's, you know, something you were given, but you don't have to feel bad about getting these privileges. But I think now I realized, maybe for her is that with these privileges come responsibility. So I think it made me realize that we really do have a responsibility. Like to those who've been given much, much is expected. So we really have a responsibility to try and take down those barriers that prevent people from having the access they need to like medical services. Or like if they need some kind of information and we are able to give it to them, then we should facilitate that. I think one of the books recently in Singapore that everybody talks about is this book by Teo Yu Yen called This Is What Inequality Looks Like. And in it, she talks about how if we try to talk about poverty, then we really have to confront social inequality because poverty doesn't happen in a vacuum. That the poverty people face is in context, in comparison to the other people who are doing well, to the majority of people in Singapore who seem to be doing well. So I think as Christians, we need to understand that there are structural or institutional problems that also perpetuate this social inequality that makes it difficult for people to leave or to get out of poverty even if they want to.
So you think there are ways which we can tackle social problems?
I think we will always have the poor with us, but we need to try and bring down the barriers that prevent like social mobility, for example. I guess that's why in Singapore there's always like been a lot of emphasis on education, on the younger generation, on breaking the cycle of poverty. But in my work, yeah, most of the people we work with, they are already very elderly. They are, you know, in the second half of their lives. And it's hard for them. I mean, education is not going to lift them out of poverty. They need help. They need outside help. Whether it's from the church, whether it's from like the community or from their own government, they definitely need outside help.
Do you want to say anything about stratification of Singapore? What you see in church?
I think there's been a lot of talk in Singapore. Even our PM talks about social stratification.
Which was the bad product of the meritocracy.
Yeah. And I guess we are the generation who benefited from meritocracy. And now we are also the generation that is perpetuating the advantages, you know, that accrued with our success. Yeah, so I see my peers are the ones, maybe their parents were working class people, but now they are very middle class and their kids are reaping the benefits of that. But how do we help other people as well? Other children, or how do we increase their access so that we're not just the ones like benefiting? I think we need to be careful about that in church as well, because we can assume that everyone in ARPC is of a certain social class and we take for granted a lot of things. I don't know, maybe like when they go out for lunch after service and they pay $20, they don't think about it. But for some people, $20, they don't want to spend that much on lunch. I've not really had to deal with these issues. I think when I left ARPC, we were still like having lunch at Adam Roo Hawker Center. I was very surprised when someone told me that he changed church. One of the reasons he changed church was because his DG would go out for lunch and then every week it was like $20. Felt like he couldn't be part of that. And then after I told his story to someone, he said, oh yeah, there was another person that from my DG who did the same. So I guess just from anecdotal evidence, there are people who feel like they don't fit into ARPC because of the things that maybe people take for granted, you know, like their overseas holidays, their $20 meals or whatever. Yeah, and I think for me, I'm guilty of that as well, because I remember many years ago when I first joined ARPC, I mean, at that time, the joke was that, I'm sure this is not true now, not so true now, but it used to be. I mean, the joke was that people would say, oh, you know, if you throw a stone in ARPC, you'll hit a scholar. So those were the days when, yeah, it was a joke. I mean, you didn't really, I think when you make these jokes, it's like, these jokes are okay to make if you feel like you can laugh at yourself. But actually for people who, these jokes might be quite alienating for some people. I remember when I first joined ARPC, I said something like, oh, you know, it's like not a big deal to graduate from blah blah university. And this person said to me, yeah, it may not be a big deal to you, but, you know, I didn't go to university and it's a big deal to me. So, you know, so you making this comment is not helpful. And I think, so very early on in ARPC, I realized, oh, you know, we really shouldn't take for granted in the way that we say things or the way we make jokes or the jokes that we make. I mean, we might think that we are poking fun at ourselves, but to others who already feel like they don't quite fit in for whatever reason, then it is alienating. So I think it's for us to be sensitive about that. And I'm glad that ARPC has become a lot more diverse over the years. So I think we are really learning to be more inclusive.
Please, Scott, maybe can you tell us a bit more about how you translate those sensitivities that you think God is teaching you about the poor in PFG, which is your Pearl Family Garden Ministry in Taiwan, right?
Yeah, so at the Pearl, we work with women who are in prostitution or living in poverty. And many of them are already quite elderly, so it's difficult for them to find other jobs. They usually don't have family support. They live on their own, so they are quite lonely. And the Pearl is a community for them. It's their social network, in that sense. It's their community, it's their fellowship. What we try to do at the Pearl is that we really want to help people to like reconnect with society. We want to connect them with the church. We want to help them connect with social services if that's the help that they need. To do that, we work very closely with social workers at YWCA. We provide medical subsidies for medical help for people who need medical treatment, long-term medical treatment. For those who want to leave the sex trade, we also help them with their living expenses, like during the transition period. And then for rare cases where they might need money for accommodation or longer-term help, we do that on a case-by-case basis as well. But money is not the most important thing. What helps them is also if there's someone to journey with them, like accompanying people when they go to the doctor, when they go to the social worker, or when they're looking for a job, providing practical help. That's the kind of help they need. They need someone to also guide them through the process, to encourage them when they face setbacks.
Do they come to PFG with the intent to break out of the sex trade?
Most of the time, no. But there are people who, after a long time getting to know us, and then because of some crisis they face, they will come and look for help because they know we are there and we are willing to help. So we find that once we have a relationship, you know, over the years, then they will approach us if they need help.
So the bridge was really the social support, like the loneliness, the fact they need someone to be part of a community with.
Yeah, so for example, there was this lady who's called Mei Qi. That's the name that she used on the streets. I think I've known her for like the last 7 or 8 years. Every time I walk past her, I would smile at her, but I was never sure whether she was going to smile back at me. But then one day she came to the pool because she faced a shoplifting charge. To us, it's like, okay, you are caught shoplifting, you know, you just have to face the consequences, right? But to her, it was so serious because she felt that she didn't know how to explain it to her family. She felt it was a big loss of face. So for her, it was even making her suicidal because, you know, she didn't know how to deal with this situation. I mean, of course, there are reasons why she shoplifts. I think it's not just the money, but I think there are other reasons behind her shoplifting. But for her, it was like such a big thing. She just couldn't face it. But in the end, you know, we helped her to connect to the Legal Aid Foundation. She got legal representation and she had to go to prison, but not for very long, maybe just 2 or 3 months. At first, she wanted to pay a fine so that she didn't have to go into prison. But we convinced her that it was better to save her money, or I mean, not to spend the money that she didn't have. And then through that experience, when she came out of prison, then she started looking for a job. But of course, all these things took a lot of time, you know, like finding a job, losing her job for whatever reason, and then finding another job again. I don't know what, I mean, we haven't done research in Taiwan, but in the US, they say that it takes at least 7 attempts for a woman to come in and out of the sex trade before they will leave. So it takes a lot of attempts and sometimes unsuccessful attempts. So we shouldn't be too surprised when it takes a long time to see change happen.
So I understand you also have this crafting that is also helping the women in PFG to earn some income, right? How did that come about?
Our handicraft project started actually as a way for one lady who came out of prison, as a way for her to make some money. So it just started with one person. And now we have about 15 to 18 women who come every Friday to work together, to make this handicraft together. And then we have 4 of them who actually will do the stuff at home. They will make the products at home.
Was this a way that encouraged them to come out of the sex trade?
Actually, for the handicraft program, we found that actually there is twofold. One is for the people who are thinking of leaving the sex trade. If this is a way, like the handicraft program can be a way to help them to develop a work ethic. So they just start by coming once a week. They do some, like they have to sit there for like 3 hours, they have to do something. It's like a stepping stone before they are ready to maybe look for a job outside. So we've had one lady who started just in the handicraft program, and then after a while, she gained enough confidence to look for a job outside. But for others, because of their age, they are not able, or because of their age or their health problems, they are not able to find jobs outside. So they depend on the handicraft program for their income. So it's mainly these two groups who benefit. And then, of course, there are people from the community who find it a good way to spend their time and also they get a little bit of help and they get a free meal.
So it sounds like you use PFG as a way to build a lot of relationships with these women.
Where, that's right.
How do they know about PFG?
Some of them are brought by their friends, but we also do a lot of outreach. We visit people, the women in the KTVs and what we call the tea shops where they work, or when they are waiting for customers on the streets, we approach them.
What were some of the reactions you got?
Most of the time, people will take the magazines or whatever we offer them. But I think what's most effective is if, you know, a friend brings them. That's usually how they connect with our ministry, through their friends.
For example, Meiti, you mentioned you weren't even sure she would smile back at you. So how did then she end up seeking help from you?
She approached us. She knew where we... because she works on the same street. Some of the women, they know where our center is and they will come and look for help.
So that's really like a gate wide open.
I think for us, we want people to know, okay, we are here when you need help or when you would like to make certain changes, then we are here to facilitate that. Our approach is, in Chinese, we call it pei ban, which is like you accompany people. It's not so much about telling people what to do or what I think you need, because what I think you need might be quite different from what you think you want. So we always try to start with that relationship. It's like a peer relationship. It's not like I'm telling you what to do. Because we find that sometimes when Christians come, they're very eager to do certain things, like convince people they need to leave the sex trade, for example. Or there'll be Christians who offer help even before they ask for help. Or they don't know what kind of help is needed. You know, so there are enthusiastic people who will bring us used clothes, but they don't ask, you know, if that's what the women need. Or there are Christians who say, who come to our center and they say, oh, they are so pitiful. But actually, they actually don't know the story of the women in our congregation, in our group. So how do they know that they are pitiful? You know, things like that. Or there'll be people who ask me, what is this woman doing? You know, is she still working or is she just one of the elderly living in the neighborhood? And actually, I don't think we need to make that distinction. I think because sometimes people just want to help the deserving poor, people who they think of as deserving. But I think it's not helpful to make those distinctions.
Might be hurtful.
And sometimes, I guess, we just want to find a solution together. We don't want to create dependency and we don't want to be paternalistic. On one extreme, you can be paternalistic. You end up creating dependency. And I think we want to avoid those extremes.
You will offer the help when they find that they need help.
Yeah, so we want to be journeying with the person where you're at, not ahead of you. Because it really depends on the person to set the pace. What are the things that they want to change? So we are there to facilitate that, to encourage that. We are not there to try and change people.
What are some of the challenges you met in the PFG ministry?
I think some of the most difficult moments are when we find that people get stuck. You know, they might be stuck in addiction or stuck in some sinful behavior or stuck in a vicious cycle and they can't break out of it. And it can be very tough because we feel like we are also stuck in that situation. Feel like despite my help, there's no progress.
You wanted to see results?
Yeah, we want to see, you know, people getting better, but when they're not better or when they don't meet our expectations, then we are disappointed. But of course, these are our expectations. One thing I've learned is that we shouldn't be discouraged. We shouldn't have expectations. I think it's best if we don't have expectations of great results. We do pray and we expect God to do more than what we expect. But then we shouldn't be surprised when people are stuck or when they fall back into sinful behavior.
Sini trusts that God will do more than she expects. So in Ephesians, Paul prays, to him who is able to do immeasurably more than we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us. To be sure, people are often stuck in sinful behavior. But as Christ begins to dwell in our hearts through faith, God graciously enables us to live a life worthy of the calling we have received.
We just have to be realistic, I guess, with the situation, and we can be gracious because God has been gracious with us. Sometimes also I find myself using kind of middle-class mindset to judge behavior. So for example, there are times when I feel very outraged by certain behavior. You know, I think, oh, how can this person be so greedy? Or how can this person be so ungrateful? Or I feel like I've been taken advantage of. But then I remind myself that I've never had to face those very challenging life situations. And the fact is, I cannot change people. I cannot change people. I can only forgive them.
Mm.
And also, I think one of my colleagues who is a pastor's wife, she reminded me that in church, actually, people also have the same kind of behavior, but it's just expressed in different ways. It doesn't look exactly the same, but you know that the motives behind may be the same. You know, things like greed or selfishness or whatever. These things are in the church as well.
Yeah. Sinful nature.
That's right. So she keeps telling me, you know, don't think that it's different in the church. Don't think that, you know, only at the poor people behave badly. Actually, there are times when we are also ungrateful or, yeah, we are selfish. I think that's a good reminder. I think one of the things that are important when we are doing this ministry is that, like I said, we don't want to be paternalistic. There's this term that this Catholic priest, Father Greg, who works with gangsters, he says, he always emphasizes a lot on this term that he calls mutuality and kinship. So he talks about how we should be willing to see ourselves in kinship with people on the margins. He says that our kinship should even erase this dividing line of service provider and service recipient. So I think we need to remember that we are not service providers. Yeah, we are different from the social worker. You know, with a social worker, you can't call your social worker after office hours, but you can call your pastor after working hours.
What if they keep coming for the free meals? What do you do?
Oh, actually, we don't mind. We don't mind people coming for the free meals. I think in the past, I used to be upset. I used to think, oh, why do they only come for the meals, but they don't stay for the meetings? But now I'm much more, you know, this is God's grace. It's almost like, don't be offended by being taken advantage of, or don't feel like you are being taken advantage of.
But how do you move beyond this dependency?
I mean, we don't want to encourage unhealthy dependency, but we do recognize that there are people in the community who are no longer able to be independent. They cannot support themselves on their own. And the good thing about our neighborhood is that because it's a neighborhood with so many like low income and elderly people, there are different places that offer meals at different times. What we can do is we can connect people to these resources. I mean, these are the services that are available. So we don't have to do everything, provide all the services. We can connect them with other organizations and non-profit organizations or other agencies.
Was there a time you wanted to quit?
Yeah, by nature, I'm very task-oriented, like a good Singaporean. So about 3 to 4 years ago, I was feeling quite depressed about ministry and I felt like I wasn't seeing change. And it was difficult for me to visit the karaoke's, to visit women where they were working because it was so depressing. I mean, I felt like nobody was interested in the gospel. But actually, on looking back, I think that was just my perception. That was not necessarily what was happening at the time. Like, things were happening, just that I was very negative. And I thought, nothing is happening.
For example, what was happening?
Well, that year, somebody got baptized. She was baptized only within a year of getting to know us. You know, it's not that God is, like, He's working, but we're just not seeing. We just don't perceive the changes. But actually, God used someone at that time to say to me, your work here is not done. I remember complaining to God about our conversation. I said, well, that's easy for this person to say. But how do I continue? Because I don't feel like I can. I think that was a time when I just had to take away like my expectations of what is effective ministry, my ideas about, you know, what it means to have effective ministry. And I think really I have to trust God to be the one to bring about the changes. I'm just faithful. I just do the things that He tells me to do. And when things don't happen the way that I expect, maybe not to get discouraged, but to understand that really it's the Holy Spirit and it's His timing.
What advice do you have for people wanting to be involved?
Don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone, because God can teach us new things when we are open. if we're always stuck in our comfort zone, then we are not able to experience more of what he wants to do in our lives and to get to know people who are different. Like Pastor Chris first talked at church camp, he talked about how Christ breaks barriers and how we should also break down barriers and also build bridges. Like the two things that he spoke about, like missions at our doorsteps and ministering to people of another generation. So I think, yeah, we need to get out of comfort zone in terms of getting to know people who are different from us, whether it's different in terms of age or difference in terms of nationality, culture or socioeconomic class, things like that. Yeah, so I think it was very encouraging to hear Pastor Chris say that, you know, we should get out of our holy huddles and not be afraid to do something that's unfamiliar. Also, many ways in RPC that we can be involved in missions. We have actually many ministries that break down the barriers. You know, we have the prison ministry, we have BBGB ministry, we have tuition ministry, we have the Rhoda and Tabitha ministry. The Rhoda and Tabitha ministries reach the domestic helpers. We are going to start a new ministry that engages the elderly people who are living on their own in Bishan. These are ministries that we can get involved with in church, but actually we can all engage with people around us.
Right, down to our neighbor?
Yeah, that's right. Actually, all around us, there are people who need the Lord. So it's whether we are willing to take that extra step to show care and concern. There are many channels, many ways for us to be involved, whether in the church or outside the church.
How can we pray for your PFG ministry or maybe for yourself?
The talks at church camp, they've been quite challenging to me when Pastor Chris talks about worldliness and he talks about how worldliness is chasing like self-made, self-pleasing, self-glorifying lives. And I think I'm always asking myself, like, am I also trusting in my own effort? Am I just trying to please myself? Am I trying to glorify myself? Yeah, you can pray for me that I can put God first in my life and not trust in my own efforts, whether it's in my ministry or my relationships or in my use of time and things like that. So that's something you can pray for me about. And then for our ministry, we are looking for a new center. We would like to find a bigger space. Right now, we are on the second floor, so we want to find a place where the elderly can access more easily. And then we would like to recruit 2 new Taiwanese co-workers. One would be a social worker or someone with a social work background to help our ladies to navigate social services to get the support they need. And then the other person we will be looking for is a handicraft project manager, somebody who can help us develop new products and think of more places to sell our products. I think that we also need a lot of prayers because as our ladies grow older, they need more support. We really sense that urgency, trying to share the gospel with them before it's too late. So we really feel that because many of them are in their 70s, even 80s. Just pray that they realize that the time is short and they are willing to make a commitment to follow Jesus even in their old age.
Thank you, Zee.
Thank you for listening to Light from Asia, a podcast by Adam Road Presbyterian Church. Xin Yi has dedicated herself to helping the disadvantaged in Taiwan. She also challenged us to get involved in the lives of people who are different from us. Check out the show notes for some ways to get involved. If you would like to learn more about God's heart for justice, I urge you to read Generous Justice by Tim Keller. Thank you for listening.